God.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance tonight. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Rachel.
Welcome. Welcome.
Anybody else? At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those in attendance, please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that the book Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism based on simple actions. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA simple actions. AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open, big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step one. Please welcome our panel, Liz and Kevin. And I will begin the first paragraph on page XXVI that the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanaged. Part one, the physician who at our request gave us this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement which follows. In this statement, he confirms what we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe, that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life, that we were in full flight from reality, or were outright mental defective. These things were true to some extent, in fact, to a considerable extent with some of us, but we are sure that our bodies were sickened as well. In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. As laymen, our opinion as to its soundness may, of course, mean little, but as ex-problem drinkers, we can say that his explanation makes good sense. It explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account. And Kevin's going.
Yeah, I'm a brief recovering alcoholic named Kevin Clanton.
Kevin.
Hey, Kevin.
And, finding out that I had a physical allergy to alcohol was kind of a relief, actually. I knew I couldn't stop thinking about alcohol, but I didn't understand that once I started, that the first drink got me drunk, basically. It was a relief to know that I was not the only person that once I started drinking, the train kept going until, usually till I blacked out or something horrendous happened. I am definitely not a doctor, but I have been forced to go see a few by the fine Commonwealth of Virginia. And knowledge is a great thing, but just knowing I was a drunk wasn't enough and knowing why I drank wasn't enough. But it is a handy piece of information. That's about all I got. We're going to let Liz talk.
Hi, my name is Liz and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Liz.
I love when it mentions allergy. This is 1930s science. I have been to rehab and seen all the videos on addiction and all that. And there is some science behind that. It may not necessarily, the scientific term allergy may not be allergy, but it is a manifestation in the brain. When I drank, when I started drinking, I could not stop. And that was from 14 on till the last day I drank, which was when I was 49. So however many years that is, lots of them. Or if I did stop, I didn't want to stop and became irritated or just resentful or whatnot. I went through, in my long drinking career, I went through a lot of spells where I didn't drink as much. But that was due to outside circumstances, reasons, kids are around, and all that. But I always fantasized of that day when I was going to drink the way I wanted to. And as that day approached, time moved slower. I'm going to get to drink. I'm going to get to go to the bar. I'm going to get to drink the way I want to. And as I fantasized about this, time just moved slow and slow. And when I was married, it felt like my ex just literally threw everything in front of the door so I couldn't go to the bar. When she actually did, it was just in my head. That's how powerful the compulsion to drink is. It also mentions in this reading, you know, the alcoholic is quite abnormal in his mind or her mind. Of course, my mind, I'm a trans woman, and that's, you know, an outside issue. But I tried to live during part of my drinking career where I was drinking the most and probably crossed that imaginary line that they talk about elsewhere in the book. I was living a double life at that point, and a life at work as a male and as everywhere else as a female. And juggling that amongst drinking on top of it was just literally pushed me to the edge. And anyway, that's where my powerless not over on alcohol. I'm powerless over myself, my want to lie, my want to make everyone happy. And that's kind of what I get from this reading. So thank you.
Thank you both. Okay, the next reading is on page XXVII. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. Tonight, Kevin.
Yeah, I don't know. It talks about something I don't understand here, which is normal people and how it does not affect them. I started drinking at a very young age, and I'm a construction worker. I started doing construction about 6 years before I got out of high school, and I drank with guys that were in their 30s and 40s. And when you tell me normal drinkers, I think of the people I drank with that taught me these valuable lessons, like meet my wife, there's nobody at their house. Meet my kids, there's nobody at their house. Drinking had already ruined all that. They taught me valuable lessons like anything smaller than a half gallon is a single serving. And when you tell me normal drinking, that is what normal drinking is for me. It is a drink till everything else doesn't matter. And, you know, the phenomenon of craving, I understood, because the only time I did not crave alcohol is when I was drinking it. You know, and it took 32 years before I could honestly look at my life. And God, I hated inventories then. I love them today. Before I could honestly put everything down and see how important alcohol was to me and how many things I loved and cherished that I had given away. Because that's all I knew, you know. And once, it's amazing, because people would tell me, you change when you drink. I couldn't see it, you know, because if I wasn't drinking, I was just a train wreck. You know, it talks about being restless, irritable, and discontent. I just felt like my skin was crawling off. I wasn't comfortable being me. I couldn't be me, is what I thought, unless I was drinking. And once I take that first drink, they say that craving takes over. That's when normalcy would set in. I felt like the world is good, and usually terrible things would start to happen shortly after that, but that was normal. That was my world, you know, it's what I did. And I didn't consider it to be an allergy, you know, that was handy. I don't think I even caught that till probably the third time through treatment, that I might have something slightly askew with me when I drink. You know, I cheat. I read a lot while you're reading. And I love this part of the book because it breaks down why we do what we do. And basically, I would drink the first drink because I didn't like the way I feel, and then I couldn't stop. But not taking that drink was just not an option. You know, I always knew she would leave. I would lose the license. They will incarcerate me again. And none of those would suffice as a reason for me to not drink. It was just, that's what I did. And I like how it talks about once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon human things, their problems pile up on them. And see, that's what I couldn't see was the drink caused the problems, not the problems caused the drink. So, oh my God, she won't shut up. Oh my God, I got to pay that lawyer. I saw the problem back. I saw the results of my life and alcohol being my cure. And that's what it was. It was not my problem. It was my solution. That's about all I got.
That's for sure. Liz, alcoholic. I like that last line. Their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. Problems like filing tax returns. You know, I knew I was going to owe taxes. So let's just not file them. And that's what I did when I drank towards the end. Didn't file tax returns. Did the bare minimum to survive in my little alcohol domain. And that included not bathing for a couple of days. It just included drinking. I always think about the story about Fred and more about alcoholism. Fred's the guy that goes to Washington, D.C. and doesn't really tell you what he's doing. But from what I've learned from science about this is that this allergy, the addiction allergy, manifests itself in the same part of the brain as the fight or flight part of the brain. The I need to eat. I want to have sex. I want to defend myself. Those first 15 seconds of what do when I get panicked. And in all these stories and more about alcoholism, the characters in the story are in a somewhat of a fight or flight. What was Fred doing in Washington, D.C.? He may have had to go see the IRS. That would make you want to fight or flight. He may have been doing something. It doesn't go into the details. But I know what it's like. I've spoke in front of people for conferences at work back in the 90s when I had to have a drink or two to settle the nerves. And it's because of that fight or flight. I could not stop myself from having a drink or two. I was lucky I was not slurring and completely wasted by the time I had done this. I did this at an IEEE conference. I'm an engineer by trade. And so I'm an overanalyzer. And when I learned about this in rehab, of course, I went down the rabbit hole of addiction and learned about the science and all that. But what the book says an allergy is as simple as it can be. And that's what it needs to be when I want to do this. Every time I take one drink, I'm thinking about the second one and I'm thinking about how I'm going to get more. And when I wasn't drinking, I was thinking about, do I have enough? What's the plan to get some? And the reason why I'm in these rooms is because I'm not a very good listener. Because it took 3 DUIs and 2 of them 5 days, and for them to lock me up and for me to detox before I decided to come near these rooms. And that's what was the, that was the breaking point in the powerlessness. When you're on suicide watch in the jail and you're naked except for a turtle suit, that's pure powerlessness. And that's where I was. And when you're making friends with the heroin addicts in your block for food, that's where I was in powerlessness. Anyway, thank you for letting me share.
Okay, the next reading is on page XXVIII. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented. Unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks, drinks which they see others take with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful, with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over. And unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. On the other hand, and as strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desires for alcohol. The only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules.
Yeah, I like this. It's you know, basically what I was just talking about. It was my life. To them, their alcoholic life seems normal. And then, you know, watching other people drink, that's how I learned. I learned by example. But I like it when we get back through here and it starts talking about going through stages of a spree. That confused me because the first 15 years I drank, I didn't consider stopping. There was no spree involved until the last few years where the trouble was getting so bad, I had to stop. A lot of things happened that were just insane, but it was shocking to find out I really could not drink, even when I didn't want to drink. If I had alcohol, it got drank. If I didn't have alcohol, I got it. I had to have alcohol. But I love where they start to talk about it happens. And then you do something. You have a psychic change. You do something different. And that's what terrified me. I really didn't believe you could not drink and survive in the world. Because it's kind of like AA in reverse. I had surrounded myself with like-minded individuals. I surrounded myself with bikers, drug dealers, and drunks, and drug addicts. And most of the people I hung out with were very good at what they did. And and I like that. So I got gooder at it. And then I came here because I wanted to kill myself. And I didn't want to try to overdose again because I had tried that several times. I was thinking about shooting myself. And I had a lot of guns, so it wouldn't have been hard to do. But I came in here and I did something. I listened to someone else. Because see, the problem was I had put myself in a prison that sat squarely on my shoulders. I was the alpha, the omega, every answer except how do you breathe and not drink? And once I drink, gloves are off, life gets raped, it's terrible. And I came in and I didn't understand. I really, immature, 32 when I quit drinking, probably 32 going on 14 for emotional scale, you know, been married, divorced, been incarcerated. It was just, it was hard for me to catch up with life. And I had to take some suggestions and I had to do a few things to acquire a calm is what I call it. I am very, very greedy with my happy today. I won't let people. I ask myself the same question every day when I get done praying. Why am I doing what I'm doing today? Because I still want the same thing I did for the 18 years I drank and sold drugs. I want to be happy. And if I wasn't happy doing this, I wouldn't be doing it. The problem is I've never been sober this long. I still need advice. Doesn't matter how long you do it. And I had to humble myself enough to say, I don't have a clue. I really don't have a clue about much of life. And it's really tragic to find out life runs much better when I'm not in charge of it, you know. But I came in and I followed a few simple suggestions. I followed a few simple rules. And I never played with rules before. I did exactly what I wanted, whenever I wanted, for as long as I wanted. If I didn't like what was happening here, I usually headed south. I ended up in Miami. I just kept going south. If stuff would go wrong, keep nice, warmer, keep going. And today I don't have to run. I don't have to be ashamed about not knowing something. I can ask people stuff. I could never do that. At 18, I was a grown man. I'm not asking anybody anything. I know everything. And today, I got a lot of questions. I do. I got a lot of questions. I learn from people. I get the privilege of meeting new people doing stuff like this. And that's how we learn. I don't know. You know, I don't know how other people think or feel. And those two things terrify me. My feelings drove me to the gates of hell. And thinking, I am ill-equipped is what I have been told by more than one psychiatrist and by a few wives and several people in these rooms, a few sponsors. So I was told I shouldn't do it on my own. And, you know, you come in here and you start to follow these rules and your life will change. I can guarantee you that. That's all I got.
Oh, I like this passage. The psychic change, the William James moment. I love the spiritual experience in Appendix 2. I love reading that. What is a psychic change? I have no freaking idea. But I do know what happened to me, which I think is a psychic change. I don't know if it's a God moment, a certain thing in your brain, chemistry reacts a certain way. Who knows? And I kind of subscribe to the philosophy of this sobriety stuff is when I don't know, just keep it simple, stupid, and just do what the book says. Because there's a lot of sober people around that have been doing this for years and they stay sober and they seem happy. Don't overthink and don't take yourself too seriously. Rule 62 is my favorite rule. But I was always lying to myself about who I was. I wanted to fit in so badly. And alcohol, I was very, as you can probably imagine, a very awkward child in a certain way. And alcohol was the great equalizer. It put me on a level playing field with the rest of the boys. And got me some acceptance. And so that was what got me going. And I was able to make it through college. I've got two engineering degrees. I made lots of rules for myself about drinking. Only drink on Friday and Saturday nights. Don't drink and do your homework Monday, you know, Sunday through Thursday. And so, but come Friday night, we're getting a bottle and we're going to tear it up. And come Saturday, we're going to, this is before I found out what hair of the dog was. It took me a while. I'm not a very quick learner about the hair of the dog. I'd get over the hangover and do it again on Saturday. And that was repeated behavior and repeated enough to where I did have some blackout phases in college. And it was back in the days when I would pass out at about 1 and sleep till 3 the next day and possibly wet the bed and do all of those crazy things that we've all done in the past. I didn't get in trouble though then. I don't know why. I just didn't. One of my ex-girlfriends was sticking her finger under my nose to see if I was still breathing. And she's like, I can't deal with you when you do this. Why do you drink so much? And I'm like, well, it tastes good. I don't know. And that's what it is. You don't know. It's this craving I can't have enough. And then I figured out what cocaine was. And then that's when I quit passing out. And then I figured out what Adderall was. And that's when I really quit passing out for days. So I could continue to drink. But those habits formed out of me not wanting to stop drinking and that feeling. And then eventually it turned into why I had to continue to drink because I couldn't physically stand the withdrawals. That few drinks and just had to get me right. And I figured out a little bit before I'd gotten popped for my second and third DUI, for me to feel right, I had one of those little breathalyzer things you could get on Amazon. And for me to feel right, I had to be blowing about a 0.12, which is above the legal limit. And that's just to feel right, to do my face without shaking like this and without constantly dry heaving. And I got into this habit of, I couldn't eat until I drank. And even when I drink, I had to get high, smoke weed to even stomach food. And that's, and then the only thing I could stomach when I was sober was insurers. And that's, and is that normal? Of course, I rationalized that in my brain, that was normal. And, you know, the reason why I was hacking so much, I drank too much coffee and smoked too many cigarettes. I mean, I just totally just rationalized myself. The spiritual experience was something that was sort of unique, at least I feel unique to me, probably not. I came into these rooms after rehab. I came into these rooms initially as a male and went to rehab as a male and got a sponsor like I was supposed to, like found the first man that was interested in me, and he was a 6'6" Navy guy. And had a big pickup truck and worked on houses on the side and, you know, did all that man stuff. And I figured he'll keep me on the straight and narrow. And then I told him, you know, I didn't know what I was at that point. Everything in rehab and having been arrested and all that and been traumatic. Now, mind you, at one point, I belonged to the Broad Bay Country Club. It was making a pretty large salary and was living the good life. You know, that was in end of 2015. By 2017 and 18, I'm hanging out with drug dealers, pimps, and bartenders. That's how quickly it goes down. But and that's because I just got to drink the way I wanted to. I remember watching others at the country club drink with impunity. But then I realized after I sobered up and went to and watched people drink that were quote unquote normal drinkers, a glass of wine in an hour. Oh my God, I'd had a bottle or two in an hour. And I didn't ever notice that when I was drinking. It took me to see that. That was one of my spiritual experiences, sort of like that's how I was. But the one that I did learn is I had to be me. And I learned that from a dear friend who's no longer with us. I met him at the old Out and Proud meeting at the LGBT Center. His name was Glenn, and he accepted me for who I was. And that's when I had just finished my four step. That's when things started clicking. And that was my first spiritual experience. And then I lost the fear of having to go to jail for 6.5 months. Those were really my first two. And I have the small varieties here and there, learning what my higher power actually is, learning how I actually was versus how I thought I was, those kind of things. Anyway, I'm babbling right now, so thank you.
Okay, the next reading is on page XXX. All these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy, which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. Kevin?
I remember the first time I read this. All we have to suggest is entire abstinence. And God, I did not like that option. What it comes down to, though, was my drinking brought me here. And I came in here and I saw something. I saw people that were happy in life and they were apparently sober. I didn't really think everybody was staying sober when I got that. Well, they're sober right now. You know, I could do that for a couple hours if I had to. To come in and just say all this is going to change and believe it. You can say, yeah, I'm going to do this and this is going to change. But to come in and believe it is hard. And what I had to do was come in and say, just like you, when you drink when you don't want to. And when you drink, you can't stop. See, the first four times they sent me here through treatment, I could opt out. I'm not like you. You've never done no jail time. You never stole stuff from, and stole from a lot of people. Usually the more you love me, the more you got hurt, the more stuff you'd lose. But I'd come in here and what I found out was I'm not like regular people. None of us are like regular people. And it's wonderful. We have something they don't have. Got real involved with the church for a while. And they would say, where do you come up with this stuff? I said, I got a good guidebook. And it's this right here. This steers almost everything I do in my life today. I am different than normal people. And today, abstinence is just like breathing. I don't think about drinking. I try not to think at all. I try to just do. And I learned that here. I know what I am. I know what causes me to be the other way. And I don't want to be that anymore. I don't like hurting people. It took me probably 4 years of being sober before I would even look at, you know, why I enjoyed hurting. I'm a very broken person. And it took me a long time to honestly look at myself and say, dry, sober, I am still not the cream of the crop. I still have a lot of isms that I need to look at. And I want this to be permanently eradicated. I love the words they use in here. You know, everything's so final. It has been. My desire to drink, I haven't wanted to drink in 28 years. And I haven't wanted to hurt anybody in about 9. I got kids now and grandkids are wonderful, but the people they make them with sometimes infuriate me. Yeah, but you know, I come in here and I find out if I take a drink, I say, what do I do about that? And I follow some suggestions. And the biggest one, it's kind of important if you want long-term sobriety, is entire abstinence. You can't take that drink. And it sounds very simple, but when it is your answer for 32 years, it is really not that simple, you know, to just come in and say, that's what we got. We got, you don't drink at all, and we got God and happy. What are you looking for? Because that's what we're selling. And, you know, it takes a while to, at first it was just, I don't want to drink. And if you'd asked me what I was looking for when I got here, I'd have said, I just don't want to drink and I don't want to kill myself. I'm tired of wanting to, I got tired of hurting other people. I wanted to start hurting me, and that terrified me. And today I know if I just don't drink and I can be human enough to say I am flawed and I can talk to people. I've surrounded my life with people in this program. And that's where I get my answers. And abstinence is easy when I can get out ahead of the crazy that makes me want to drink to begin with. And that's what AA has given. That's about all.
Oh, abstinence. My abstinence was during my first year of sobriety, was encouraged by a nice piece of jewelry called an ankle bracelet that I paid $13 a day for, that measured the alcohol content. That's what you got when you got put on, when you made a bond and got to walk the streets until you got sentenced. That was the first bit of my abstinence. I can guarantee you I would have drank if it wouldn't have been for that. I did want what you had. I, of course, did try to classify myself out. I haven't seen any trans people in these rooms. So, you know, I told my sponsor, fully expecting him to, you're a what? Oh, we can't do this. Instead, he said, I really don't know much about trans people or about the LGBT community. I'm willing to learn. And you're going to learn a little bit about your alcoholism. And we're going to continue these steps. And I'm going to take you through these steps. And then I learned my alcoholism was no different than his. He was a womanizer. I was a whatever, but it was still the same causes. The wanting to be accepted, the wanting to be, you know, the sex inventory was just the same. I just had different characters in mind. It's just amazing, you know, the cross-section of people that I meet in these rooms, the Bible thumpers, the atheists, members of the LGBT community, the total straight white males, just And the common thread that we all get along in these rooms is our alcoholism, and our stories aren't that much different. We just, you know, my story may have a little more color in it than his story, but anyway. So I was not given a choice about this entire abstinence thing, and I just rolled with it. I do know I never wanted to feel like I did when I had to detox in jail. I hallucinated for a bit. I went through hot and cold flashes. I spent a lot of time in the shower because I could control my body temperature that way. And I thought I was going to die. I don't know how many days straight I'd been drinking, but it was up in the 500-700 day range. I don't know. I never wrote it down. I didn't have a drink today because I didn't count. Probably didn't have a drink that day because I had pneumonia or something like that, or was sick, or was on an airplane or whatever and couldn't get it. Don't know. But those day one and day two without a drink were the most painful days. And that's when I asked God, I just said, God, please help me get over this physical thing. And I was given some Librium because they thought I was going to seize out. And then I started feeling normal. And I'm like, I do not want to fucking go through that ever again. And it scared me enough. And then I worked these steps. And once you start rolling with a little momentum of time and you start collecting these chips and all this stuff, it was like, why do I want to drink? And I don't have the compulsion to drink. I live 60 feet away from the bar at Kogan's, which is open from 10 a.m. to 2 or 10 a.m. to 2 a.m. And I think about Italian subs and pizza there. I mean, it's there. And, you know, I don't have as much time as he does. I'll be getting 4 years next month. But the compulsion to drink just is left. Some of it's negative reinforcement. Some of it is I love my life. And some of it is God. God's given me gifts that I didn't think I would ever get. I've come completely out. I didn't think I would get there. I was told I wasn't going to get there. I was told by people, you'll not be accepted. I have been accepted. And I love my life now. I'm living my authentic self. And I don't look, you know, I look back at all those years of hiding who I was. I don't regret it. It's how I got here. And, but I do, I am living my best life right now. And will drinking enhance that? Fuck no. Because if I drink, I don't know what I'll do next, because I certainly won't come back in here. It took 3 DUIs for me to come in here the first time. And, you know, it'll take prison for me to come back in these rooms, and I'll be in jail at that point, not living my authentic self. So thank you.
All right. Our last reading is on page 152. We have shown how we got out from under. You say, yes, I'm willing, but am I to be consigned to a life where I shall be stupid, boring, and glum, like some righteous people I see? I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I? Have you a sufficient substitute? Yes, there is a substitute, and it is vastly more than that. It is a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Thus, we find the fellowship, and so will you.
Yeah, now we're getting to the good stuff. I don't like talking about my past. I survived it once. You have to qualify. I just don't live there anymore. But I love this because I think that is the best promise this thing has to offer is the best you lies ahead of you. Because in theory, we're getting better, which means we can do more because there's more avenues open to us. You know, I never dreamed I'd own a house. I never dreamed I'd be in a long-term relationship. I've been married 28 years. I own a house because she wanted one. I do things today because I believe it's what God wants me to do. And I've surrounded myself with people that do that. And I find like-minded individuals. I love nature. I do a lot of things outdoors, and it's amazing trying to get here tonight was brutal on me because I can't schedule. I have so much going on, just work, life, people wanting to do stuff. And I didn't always have that. It was rare that anybody I didn't owe money to ever wanted me to come back. And the ones I owed money to always wanted me to come back because I made them a lot of money. And that was really the extent of it, you know. And today, my life is amazing. The bad days are great, you know. I had some of my in-laws living with me because we have a fairly nice-sized house. And they said, "You're always happy." I said, "Why, of course. Why wouldn't you?" I said, "What are you upset about your health?" I said, "I should have been dead 30 years ago. Why can I complain about my health? I haven't been hungry without choosing to be hungry since I got sick for 30 years. You know, I do what I want. I don't eat what I want anymore. That's my new wrinkle. I went to the doctor. Don't go. They will change your outlook. But today I have choices and can afford to take better care of myself. And I have people that herd the kittens and keep Kev in line and say, you know, you're going to feel better. You know, you're going to do better if you do these things. And that's what I do. You know, I come in here and I try to be teachable. I can't stress how important that is because just because you've been sober a couple of days don't mean you know a whole lot. I can tell you that because I've been sober a few days and I still learn more than I know. I don't ever want to think I know everything. I was told that about this book. I said, every time I read it, it should be brand new to me. And that's why y'all sent me that text. I didn't read none of that. I said, I'm going to read this, see what I say, see what I think, because I should get better at this and it should mean something different every time I read it because my life is better and I should be able to, one, learn more and, two, offer more because that is where you're going to find your happy. Because if I'm working on just doing Kev, it spirals quick. It does not take long. And if I'm doing what God wants me to do, which is to be of service to God and my fellows, you know, someone I love dearly says, it's cleverly hidden on every page of this book. I love that. I use that a lot. I stole that one. If you come in here and just try this thing, especially if you're new. I love my first sponsor today. No one is as good as your first sponsor. They see a spark in you, others don't. Doesn't matter who it is, what they did. He said, just come in here and take a run at this thing. And if you don't like your results, no one will take that dumpster fire of a life you have. I didn't want it. Who else would? It was my life. It was the best I could do on my own steam. And I wanted to die. That's what drinking gave me. And here, I'm not scared of dying. I'm at peace with God, but I ain't in a hurry. I was in a vast hurry to end the game. That's all. That was the goal every day. Drink till I can't feel, and hopefully I will not wake up tomorrow. That was the last 8 years of my drinking. Every day, you know, and today it's a crapshoot. I've been alive a long time, but I'm happy almost every day of my life. And when I'm not, I have people that love me enough to circle the wagons and keep me out of my head. When tragedy, life happens. I've lost a lot of people. I lost a lot of people in addiction. I've lost a lot of people in sobriety, but I've always had my answers here. And even when I don't see my answer directly, I can get good orderly direction where I should start looking. That is far better than me saying, I am sure my answer is at the bottom of this bottle. Always look, the top will not get it done. The bottom is where my answer is. And it took me to the bottom. And today, it's a privilege to be here today. I had to leave, had to get up early, go to Nag's Head, work, and get here today. And this is the greatest thing I've done all day. And I've got to kiss my wife, work for myself, and then come to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And by far, this is the best thing I've done all day. That's about all I got.
Thanks for sharing. Oh, I love a vision for you. I wish you would have pulled out the excerpt of the Four Horsemen, Terror, Bewilderment, Frustration, and Despair. I love that. I don't know why. It sounds cool. Or the Hee-Haw version, Gloom, Despair, and Agony on Me. If you walk a mile in my shoes, you'll figure out that I'm all about the fellowship. I have sponsees. I do Viskipa, Circipa, all the YPA stuff. Hell, I'm 53. I don't even know what I'm doing in YPA, but I do it because I love the young people. The young people in this program is where I see the spark and where I see, and I want what they have. Because a lot of these young people got sober on their own accord. They didn't get sober because consequences. They wanted to get sober to have a better life. And they got they decided to put the shovel down and quit digging. And I love that. The fellowship has brought me a ton of friends. I work at home, so I go to meetings at night, pretty much every night. And that was my routine when I came into the rooms and I stayed sober. And so why do something different? It worked when you came in these rooms. Just keep doing what you're doing. I was so excited to get out of jail. My release date was on March 29th of 2020. So when I got out of jail, we were in COVID. There was Zoom, and I look forward to the fellowship even on Zoom. And then seeing people that I'd met on Zoom. And then I started working with VisKipa at the host committee for the last conference and met people I wouldn't have met otherwise. And if you've been to a WIPA conference, you know what I'm talking about. And if you haven't gone, I suggest you go no matter what your age. It's a lot of fun. The sobriety countdown was so cool. I'd never seen anything like that before. And here I'm on the host committee putting this thing on, and I've never been to WIPA before. That's what COVID kind of did for some of us. I love working with my sponsees and seeing light bulbs pop up and seeing them make tons of mistakes, but seeing them learn. I tell my sponsees to tell me the truth no matter what. Don't tell me I'm sick. The dog needs to go to the vet or something like that. They don't want to come over. Tell me I don't want to come over because I don't want to feel full with you today. I don't want to read. I hate this shit. Be honest. Talk about your honesty, because honest was what I wasn't before I came into AA. And I've learned how to live a life of honesty and openness. I've done things outside. I'm starting to do some service work outside of AA. My therapist suggested it. And I do work with homeless trans people through the transgender assistance program. But being of service to others is the key to recovery and giving of yourself where you can. And I've been blessed with abundant opportunities. And I generally say yes and then wonder why the hell I said yes. And then just do it and get resentments. But I learned how to work through them. You get start doing a lot of service work, you don't have those suicidal thoughts anymore. You have homicidal thoughts. But you learn to meet people where they are. And that's what I've learned over the last couple of years with VisKipa, with home groups, and all that kind of stuff. The fellowship is insanely crazy. I was looking at my cellular bill, and my kids' stuff is on there too. And what it was like when I was drinking was they were using all these data minutes and all the texts and all that. And I look at my minutes now and my text, and it's like, y'all don't talk on the phone at all compared to what I do now. I love the accountability. And for those of y'all that know me, people have codes to my apartment so they can let themselves in. It's a safe place. I live by myself, and it's in Ghent and right in the middle of all these meetings. I chose to live where I live because of recovery. The fact that I couldn't drive to meetings, I could walk to a meeting a day. It was chosen intentionally. And I'm grateful for my life. Being of service is the best gift I've gotten. And I don't think I can say any more. But add the four horsemen. Okay. Line to this next time.
Thank you both so much. And you guys have a chance to thank them. Right, we're going to pass the seventh tradition basket. You can sign up for email on our website at simpleactions.net. We do have PayPal and Venmo. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Announcements. Are there any AA related?
Hey, Ashley, is that contagious?
Thank you.
Hey, Michael.
So we just started, we put together several chair members for elections, and now we need to start getting part of the subcommittees. As everyone's familiar with the village, it takes a lot of people conferences together. And as was shared, service work has been a critical part of my recovery. Those distracting, get involved. So if you have anything that you would like to ask us about with this EPOP, please see Liz, this lovely leader right here, Maggie, Ashley, Frankie. Yes, there's several of those.
Anybody else? Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Okay, there is literature available over here. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting if you need any literature. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us, or you can email us at info@simpleactions.net. Reminders, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. The meeting after the meeting. All are invited and encouraged to join us for the fellowship at the meeting after the meeting that will be held at Plaza del Sol on 22nd and Colonial. In closing, I'd like to thank the panel again, Kevin and Liz. You guys were amazing. And everyone will have a chance to come up and thank them. And then Morgan has volunteered or been voluntold to read the last two paragraphs on page
16. I'm Morgan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Morgan. Hey, Morgan.
Our book realized we know that we're sick, but obviously we cannot transmit some to pass this fact. Abandon yourself to God as your fellow. Clear away the wreckage of your path. Freely of will surely trudge the road of happy. May God bless you.
Morgan. Thank you, sir.
All right, we're gonna circle up and close with the Lord's word.
I can search traditions to be organized, my dear.
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.